Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here today. Today, we are going to be talking about the shift. Which one, we say these days? Is it the shift from 3D to 5D to 9? Is it the shift in the world and we're all going to go poof? No, we're going to talk a little bit simpler. It's about the shift and how it changes everything. It's just a shift in our perception, day-to-day perception. Who are we? Who are others that we interact with and engage with? And how does that little dance play out? If we remember, we look back at history in the 80s and 90s, it was all about the I. I had to have things. I had to have a car, had to have a house, had to have all of these letters behind our names. Everybody was clamoring for college, the big ticket, and everybody had to have everything. Well, we saw what happened with that in the years 2000. Everything went poof. All of a sudden, everything went down the drain. Now we look at the millennials and we say, how can they live? And they're just existing on so little, and they just enjoy each other, and they're having all kinds of different experiences, and they aren't going up the silo. We always talk about that on the show, the silo, the S-I-L-O. It's all about going up, and it's all about your name is tagged on the outside. Well, really, they're all about engaging the world around them. There is no separation anymore between anyone, and it's really about how you treat others, how they treat you, how you exist in this dance together. You honor and respect everyone for the place in which they are in life, and isn't that wonderful? Today, my guest is Kimberly White. Her book is The Shift, How Seeing People as People Changes Everything. Kimberly, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Jeanette. I'm really pleased to be here.
So, Kimberly, don't you think that, there's a lot of changes? I think it's just evolution of history. We all come up to experience something more, yes?
Yeah.
So, Kimberly, can you share with us how you even started to write this book, The Shift? Because so many times people will say, what is the shift really about? And, oh, my gosh, do I have to change myself again? And I think almost we want to say, gosh, if you don't look at yourself every day and, you know, kind of say, how am I fitting into the world around me? Maybe you do need a shift, right?
Yeah, indeed. I'm a big believer in change. You know, you just don't know what kind of habits you're getting into. If you never stop to reflect, you can end up having years and even decades go by without noticing what you're doing in your life. And that's tragic. We need to be paying attention to what we're doing. Now, I started this book. It wasn't even my idea. You know, most people write a book because they have an idea of something they want to write about. And I was just commissioned for this. I used to work back in college for a consulting company. They're called the Arbinger Institute. And they have just a wonderful, wonderful program teaching business managers and leaders how to sort of cut through the sort of fighting and conflict and dislike and little wars that happen in businesses between departments and things like that. So I had worked for them. I didn't work for them anymore. I was a freelance writer. But one of their clients was a healthcare company running nursing homes in California. And they just were doing really interesting things. And they thought it would be fun to have a book, which they mostly intended to be for their own people, just sort of a book for their own culture and their own company. Mm-hmm. So they hired me to come in and write this book. And I was living in Manhattan at the time and really was taking myself very seriously as a writer. You know, I put that in quotes, a writer, where I had insight and education and experience, and I came in as an outsider to sort of put my beautiful words in their mouths, and it was really kind of all about me. It was about how great I was going to be and how I could make this book about philosophy and leadership, and I could stand forward as an example. And it was very much envisioned to be sort of a businessy, here's how to do things, here's me sharing my wisdom sort of book. And that was what I had planned. And when I tried to make appointments with the executives of this particular company, we had an appointment made and then it got canceled because some sort of crisis came up for them in their facilities. But there I was, I had traveled out there, and they said, you know what you really need to do? Like, if you're really going to understand our company, what we do anyway, you should go buy a set of scrubs and go into one of these facilities and hang out and see what we do.
Right.
And I thought, that is not what I want to do. I am important. I bought suits. I have a new blazer. I don't want to be in scrubs hanging out with the old people and the nurses. That just didn't sound like any fun. So that's the kind of mindset that I was in. And I went in to the first facility in my scrubs, and the administrator of the facility, the manager there, set me to follow along with a nurse named Lauren, who was a wound nurse. So her job was to go through and check on all the bed sores and the surgical wounds and make sure everything was healing properly and treat them and so on. And I would follow her around. And I thought that would be sort of the most interesting thing, because what I didn't want to do was to actually talk to the patients and have to pretend to be interested. You know, I thought, I can go look at wounds, that's right up my alley, and I can feel like I'm immersing myself without really having to engage with people. But this nurse, this Lauren, just astonished me, because she didn't seem to think that she had a bad job or a rough time or that there was anything wrong with working in a nursing home. She was so excited to show me around. And every place we went, she'd, you know, knock on the door and she'd tell me, okay, we're going to go in to meet Mrs. So-and-so and you're going to love her. She is so great. She's so funny. And we'd go in and we'd talk to the lady. And then we'd go to the next room and she'd pause outside the door and say, I can't wait for you to meet this guy. He is so smart and he's so intelligent. And, you know, he has diabetes, but his mind is all there. He's going to say something really clever. I can't wait for you to see. And we go to the next door. And again, she'd tell me how wonderful the person was I was about to meet. And I was just astonished, because it had never occurred to me to treat these people as real people whose personalities could enrich me or whose insights could help me. And here this nurse was showing me, I'm not impressed with you being from Manhattan. I'm not impressed with you writing a book. I'm impressed with these patients, and I can't wait to share them with you.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of times, too, people look at their outside parts and they have all of this exterior labels and deciphers upon them, and they kind of like tend to ride that kind of car. Do you know what I mean? And then they can't understand when there's a car in front of them slows down, or a car in front of them is broken down, or, you know, has a tire that's blown out, and they kind of like get aggravated and want to go around it, you know? And when really instead you look at it, can you get out and can you help them in any way that's possible, you know? And I think sometimes we do that in life. We say, you know, what's really going on out there? You know, I live in New Orleans area, and here everybody, there really aren't labels. Pretty much when they meet somebody new, they'll say, oh, where'd you go to school? They don't mean college. They mean, where'd you go to high school?
High school.
Because that tells you about your neighborhood. It tells you about, you know, the type of people, and maybe, oh, you might know their friends and you might know their mother or their father, whatever. So it kind of brings you a home connection. And I think the idea that we are separate from others has really starting to go by the wayside. And really realize that without the person next to you, it's irregardless of what they do or what they say or anything. It's really just about the human being next to you. You know, when you talk in your book, too, about, you know, about when people come to work and stuff, you know, about having a better job or worrying about more money or anything or getting better. You know, a lot of times workplaces will say, well, what are your goals? And I'm going, what do you mean a goal? You know, I'm here to live. I'm here to enjoy. I'm here to experience. And, you know, you wrote about one in your book. You said about the cleaning the floors. And immediately it came to my mind. It says he comes to feel alive with the people. he lives his life with. Because, you know, we go to work, we're spending 8 to 10, 12 hours a day with people. Well, that's half of our life. Why would we want to say we have a life outside of our job and turn around and say, I'm going to my job? Are you kicking out the rest of your life? It just doesn't make sense, you know? In other words, our lives should be equal across all paradigms and teaching everybody, I mean, being honest with everybody and being loving with unconditional love with everybody and caring for everybody should be across the board. It shouldn't just be categorized by their outside labels, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I think we make that mistake all the time, especially at work, especially leaders and managers, but all of us can do it, where we think work is where I earn money and it's very separate from my life. And there, you know, you have professional rules and there are definitely differences between your work life and your home life. But the people that you work with, they're still people. They didn't stop being people because you met them at work, you know. So the thing that makes life sort of vibrant and wonderful. So this man, Jason, that you mentioned that I wrote about in my book, just for your listeners, his job, he's in a nursing home, and his entire job is to push the floor polishing machine in this facility. That's his entire job description, which does not sound like a very glamorous job. It doesn't sound fulfilled. You know, nobody wakes, you know, nobody when they're a small child thinks, oh, maybe when I'm grow up, I can push a floor machine. You know, it has none of the sort of sexy excitement of some other jobs, but he was the happiest man. He was so invested. And it was because of what you just said, Jeanette. He really cared about the people he worked with. He cared about the patients in that facility. He was devoted to them. So for him, because they were alive to him and they were real people to him, and he always remembered their real humanity, when he was pushing the floor machine, it wasn't a boring, low-skilled job. For him, it was, I get to make sure that the floors are smooth and safe for the wheelchairs, for the people who have trouble walking. And then with his free time, you know, when he was the only one in the hall and a call light went on, he would be the one to go check on the patient. If the nurse was, he'd go in, what do you need? And he could pass the word. So he created for himself this better job, this fuller and more meaningful and exciting and more passionate job. And it wasn't because he had some great education or even because he had, you know, career growth or any of those things. It was because the people around him, every one of them was real to him. Every person in that facility mattered to him. He saw them all as people and he was motivated by wanting to help them and do things for them. And that's how he ended up with this tremendously happy life and this great love for his work, something that we so often forget. You know, if we want work to be just this place where we earn money, that's fine. You can survive that way. But it can be so much more. It can be so much better. Because if you're alive to the people and if they're real people to you, if you really see them as people, as I put it in my book, then that job isn't just about earning money. It's about partnership. It's about friendship. It's about helpfulness. It's about banding together to accomplish something great with others. And that's a very, very different experience of work than the one where you just show up, put your hours in, get your paycheck.
Yeah, I think a lot of times when they secularize it and they say, well, it's not your job. But in actuality, his job was safety. Safety of the floor, safety of the people. He would hear, he knew who was coming and going. And he would know who was, you know, coming and going. And that means also to leaving this life. He would know that, you know, a sense of that. In other words, if you're really in tune with humanity or the people around you, it is a dance that you almost get, it just changes you so much, as your book again called The Shift. It changes you so much that you really can't go back the other way. You're like, I can't do that again. There's no way I can do that. I know for myself, you know, I've had so many jobs over the years in healthcare in so many different ways, and each time I would be engaging with a patient in a different way, and it really makes you such an expansive type person that you say, I can't go back to a J-O-B. And then one day I said, you know, I had had a span of time, and I said for 6 months, I think I want to go do something like totally out of my wheelhouse. I went to the florist, And I said, I know nothing about flowers, but I want to work here part-time. And they're like, okay, we could use Christmas help and Valentine's help. So I did that. And I remember the very last day, they said to me, they said, why are you here? And I said, oh, because they asked me to be there. And I kind of just like blew it off because I knew the answer wasn't something she could think of. And it was the really reason I was there was because I was looking for love to see it a different way, how it played out. I wanted to see, were flowers, are these love? You know, is it people buy them and they're expressing themselves then through funerals or births or whatever it might be? And I wanted to see how that exchange went. And what I came up with was, well, this is not the place that I would see it, and it did not play out how I wanted it to play out, but I saw it play out differently how it was for them. You know, I think sometimes we go in with this anticipation that we expect it to play out this way, and when we do have a shift, we say, oh, everybody should be happy, the world should be great, this one will help that one, and that one will help that one, and everything will be wonderful. And then you get a real ba-boom, and it goes, oh, no, the world really didn't change, just your perception of it is. And how can you work in that world? That's a different story, right?
Yeah. Talking about perceptions like that, it's just so, it's crazy because you're right. You have, there are two things going on.
Right.
And we have, when we shift, the primary shift that I'm talking about in my book, the language that I use, you know, is seeing people as objects versus seeing them as people.
Right.
Today we discuss many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.
You know, sort of as we've been talking about, you know, people who are objects to me, they aren't really real. I don't really care about their feelings. I'm not interested in their perspective. I don't see them as mattering. They just, you know, they have to give me reports or they block me on the highway, you know, and they only exist for what I'm thinking about for myself, you know. But when we see people as people, then we care about what's going on with them. We care about how they got to where they are, what they're thinking about, what they care about. You know, if somebody is late getting a report to me, you know, if they're an object, then I'm just mad, you know, because you're just an object.
Right.
You're supposed to get my report. So I'm just mad. That's all I can do is sort of be mad at you, maybe fix you, maybe yell at you, you know, but that you're just an object. If you're a real person to me and a report comes in late, it's not the same because there's nothing to be mad about because you're a human being with reasons. So instead of being mad about the report being late, I would think, what happened? Is something going on in your life? Did I give bad directions? I want to find out why the report was late. You know, it just makes such a difference. And when we see people...
It didn't fix that incident that happened.
No.
It's just you wanted to be... In other words, you wanted to have some sort of compassion and understanding. And then the event still happened, and you still had to fix it, but still you were engaged in it, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it doesn't mean that the report isn't late. The report is late, and maybe there are consequences, maybe financial consequences, maybe personal consequences. You know, things still happen. It's just that when I see the people around me as objects, when things like that happen, and they will and they do, you can't have a life where nothing ever goes wrong, where people always do what you want them to do. When I see the people around me as objects, then when those things go wrong, I'm so limited in what I can do and how I can respond. I just feel frustrated. It's like if you have a pen that won't write, you know, and you're like, I bought this pen, I paid for it so it would write for me, and now it's not, and that is so frustrating and annoying, and you lick it, you shake it, and then right. in the end, all you can do is throw it away. Because what can you do? It's just an object. If it's not working, you're helpless, right? But a person is different. You know, a person who's not doing what I want them to do, that's because of something going on in their life. It's because of something that they've experienced. You know, if you have somebody that you really, really care about, like if it's your best friend who somehow hasn't come through on something, you don't get mad and yell at him or her. You say, what happened? Are you okay? Can I help you? And invariably you find out they had a reason for it, because people are, we're reasoners. People don't exist in a vacuum. You know, somebody is getting divorced, or their child is sick, or their mother died, or they're having trouble with their landlord who's making demands of them. I mean, people have pressures in their life that make it difficult to do things. And if we ignore those things and just treat them like objects and just get mad when they don't do the stuff we want them to do, then everybody's unhappy. I'm unhappy because I'm surrounded by objects. They're unhappy because they've got pressures in their life and nobody's understanding them. And you have a whole just sort of swirling vortex of unhappiness. But if I can shift and think about what's going on and ask the question, you know, what's going on with you? And presumably if I've built a good relationship prior to this, and so that the person is real to me and I already know some of the things that are going on in their life, and I can say, how can I help? Do you need more support? Should you be taken off this project? Or, you know, can I get somebody else to do something for you? Do you need more advanced warning? And then instead of this sort of swirling vortex of misery, I have a solvable problem. I have a human being that I can talk to who wants to get things done too and is just being prevented by circumstances in their life. We can work together. I can offer help. It doesn't mean that everything's going to be perfect and nobody ever makes a mistake, but it means that when they do, it's not an oppressive sort of darkness for me. It's just, oh, let me figure out what's going on, because people, human beings, make sense and their reasons make sense and their backgrounds make sense, and we can work together, you know, and I can ask about their feelings and they can say, you know, I really work better if I have a deadline, or I really work better if I get more support, you know, and then we can just make that happen. And then you minimize the number of problems you run into, for one thing, but you can't eliminate it. But when you do have problems, when you're seeing people as people, they become opportunities. It's not the end of the world that something bad has happened. It doesn't make you frustrated. It doesn't make you angry. It's just, hey, it's a Monday. It's a Wednesday. Here's a problem. We'll cope with it. So it changes your experience of the world. Instead of a stressful world, you have a manageable world. So in that sense, the shift really, really does change the world. But again, like you were saying, it doesn't change the world in the sense that problems don't happen. You know, right. You can still get in a car accident. You can still get sick. Other people can still fail you. But when you're seeing it differently, all of those things sort of take on a different color, and it's just a better way to engage with the world when the people around you are real and you're motivated by wanting to help them and get to know them and sort of enrich your life with their presence rather than being oppressed by their presence.
And sometimes, too, I think there's also the time where you have to walk away from some people and you have to say that's their issues and that's something that they need to do, because we can't walk around in a fix-it world either and also solutionize everything. You know, I can remember after Hurricane Katrina here in New Orleans, we were going down the highway and this guy just kept trying to run into us. And I'm going, what the heck? He's pushing us off the road. And we looked over and the guy was just, and we're like, my husband's like, gesture to him to move over, you know, to like get in his own lane. Well, he pulled off the road and my husband pulled off the road too. And we're like, what am I? They got out and the guy got out and he had scrubs on, and he started yelling at my husband that got out. And And then all of a sudden, the guy went back to his truck and came back with a baseball bat. And he started screaming at my husband that, you know, I'm here. I don't belong here. I came here to help everybody. If you don't want me here, yeah, I'm going back to where I came from. I've been stressed out. And I was going, let this guy go. Just let this guy go. This guy's got issues, and he's going to have to figure it out, you know? And I think sometimes when we see that, it's times to be able to bless them and send them on their way. So I think sometimes, you know, we say everybody wants to try to fix people and, oh, give me a challenge. I'll make them work in the paradigm, or I'll make them work on that job, or I'll fit them into my way. And it's going, I don't think so, right?
Right. In my book, this reminds me of a story about a woman named Helga that I put in there. This was this woman who was just a horrible, nasty person, you know, who just would say terrible things, you know, racist comments, insults. She'd entered this facility and was just so mean to everybody, and eventually, you know, dismissed herself like from the facility and went home. And, you know, a person like that, who's hostile even when the people around them are being kind, you know?
Right.
We can't always fix people. Some people are just damaged. Some people don't want to change. Some people don't want to respond. And you can't do anything about that because that's, you know, an object, actually, you can fix. You just repair it and then it'll be fixed. But a person isn't like that. A person makes their own decisions and they do their own thing and they have their own life. And if they choose to be mean and nasty, you can't stop them. You can't prevent that. You can set a better example and give them a friendly environment, but you can't change the person like you can an object. Well, in this facility, they went back to the woman's house just to do a follow-up. That was just their policy, to see how she was doing. And it was terrible. I mean, her home environment was not safe. It was really not safe, and they worried that she would literally die if she didn't return to the facility because she couldn't take care of herself. She had no air conditioning. It was really bad. So they brought her back to the facility. They convinced her to come back to the facility, and she continued to be nasty to everybody.
Right.
She was still horrible. She didn't change. She wasn't grateful. And in fact, they restored her to health. And they made sure she was safe before she went back home. They did everything they needed to do to keep this human being alive and make her safe. And a few weeks later, they had a customer service sort of company that would call former patients and ask them questions about their facility and how they enjoyed their stay and so on. And they called this woman who had discharged herself from their facility, and they had followed her and been concerned and brought her back and been patient with her and taken care of her no matter how badly she treated them, right? But when she got the customer service call, she gave the facility the worst possible score, like lowered their rankings. She never became grateful. She never changed. But they had a very different experience because to them, she was still a person. They honored her right to be herself. So even though it was unpleasant to deal with her in some ways, you know, in some facilities where they don't have this sort of attitude of the shift, the staff just gets frustrated and resentful and people quit because, oh, she's mean. Oh, this is unfair. Oh, this is awful. But in this facility, because she was a person, they didn't feel oppressed. They didn't feel trapped by her nastiness. They were able to see that she was a very tormented person, and they felt compassion. For them, it was like with that guy on the highway. I mean, what misery must you be in to get out of a car with a baseball bat and yell at strangers? I mean, you must be so tormented to feel that way. And that's the attitude they had toward her. She is suffering, and she won't let us help her, but that's a state of compassion. So instead of them all being worked up about how mad they are, they could just go, oh, man, poor Helga. She's so unhappy. Well, I'll make sure she's safe. That's my job. We'll do what we can for her, and what we can't do, we can't do.
And, you know, so many people forget about it, is that when people are that way, A lot of times medications are a big contributor. A lot of times mm-hmm. health conditions are. A lot of times the way they were raised. A lot of times, yeah. just as you said, the conditions that they're living in. If we are constantly looking down as people are all just going on a path and there are no deviants on that path, we will really miss out on everything that's going on in their life. While, you know, we yeah. see this a lot with physicians right now who want to quit. They are like, 50% of them are like, I'm so overdone with this. Because a lot of times now people are saying, you know, I don't know what's wrong with me, but you're not able to help me. And it's sometimes a spiritual thing. It's a soul thing. It's a nutrition thing. It's my drugs. It's my home life. It's so much more. Yet we still try to keep going down that road that this is the one golden key that's going to solutionize everything. And especially when people are at end of life, which I work a lot with, people are very angry. They are very angry about the situation they're in. They're very destitute. They lose hope. They resign. They withdraw. There's many different things that people can do. And to be able to say that, oh, we want everybody to be as this to make our life easier, when we're here to serve them. That is our job. Our job is to serve humanity at our yeah. workplace. Our job is not to turn around and make them all be like us so that they don't inconvenience us. It's not the point, right?
Oh, exactly. And especially with a book like This Shift, you know, that's kind of feel good is sort of an insulting way to put it, but you know what I mean. Like, I'm talking about how we feel about each other and generating kindness and compassion and words like this. And it's sort of easy to mistake that for, oh, if I do this, then the people around me who were jerks, they'll become nicer, and then my right. life will be more pleasant. You know, like, mm-hmm. this is what we need, you know, or people who, right. you know, who read the book and say, oh my gosh, my husband needs to read it. Well, actually, the point isn't to make other people different than they are. The point is mm-hmm. to make me different than I am. The point is to make me more compassionate to people, however I find them. And very often, this is the good news, very often when people are treated really like people, like when they know somebody cares about them and they know somebody sees them and values okay. them, very often people will become better. You know, they find that energizing and validating to be seen that way. So, yes, often if I treat someone and see them as a person and I really shift and I give kindness to someone who's not mm-hmm. used to it, very often they will change and they'll respond. So it's not that there's no point to it. I mean, people really do love to be treated like people and will return loyalty and affection for that. But that's not why you do it. You don't see a person as a person and get to know them and understand them so that they will change and be different. That's not fair. If you're doing that, then you're just treating them like an object. You're just basically trying to fix the pen. And that's right. not what this is about. You know, it's see people as they are. If they change, that's great. That's great for them. But for me, the point is, how am I seeing people? How am I approaching the world? Not who's changing. How did I make other people get their reports in on time? That's not the point. The point is, am I treating people the way they deserve to be treated? If not, I need to fix that. If I am, then that's enough. And if they change, great. And if they don't, that's their life. They get to make that decision. I don't get to make that decision for them.
You know, I think also, too, when your book is mostly about the nursing homes, and it's also, too, about your experiences therein. And mm-hmm. I think it's important to notice when people say, oh, well, I hate nursing homes, as soon as you mention yeah. the word. But I think that the idea is they hate them because they see the vulnerability of the human being. They see the decomposition of the physical body, and they see mm-hmm. the loss of control or the loss of being able to take care of yourself. And they find that very offensive to themselves. They don't want anyone to touch them. They don't want anyone to see their inner dark secrets. They don't want anyone to see that mm-hmm. Those things that they may be hiding from society or from the world around them. So really, when people go into nursing yeah. homes, they're very vulnerable, and it's a very difficult place to be. And I think only the people that what I call have sweethearts, sweet mm-hmm. and open hearts, are those that are able to to be able to really touch these people that are in that position. It's very, to me, being in healthcare for over 45 years, I mean, to me, it's like, okay, whatever, you know, it does, those things don't affect me. I'm pretty much touch and feel and experience, and I'm in the game. I'm here and, mm-hmm. you know, engaging in serving humanity thing. But so many times new people will come in and they will say, but this, but that, and you're going, okay. And you just kind of want to honor those people coming in also, because you want to see how they maneuver themselves, how they shift,
yeah.
and how they evolve. And then when they get to a point where they might be stuck, then you can just show them another way to open that door, to open their heart, to be able to do the work. Because I'll tell you, working yeah. and serving in humanity is probably the greatest gift if anybody can do it. However, that is the thing that will shift the society. Because if you're just sitting there mm-hmm. in your pencil paper and you're saying, this is the way it is, well, you're still looking at just objects, facts, life, society, whatever we've set up the paradigm to be. But if you can't really mm-hmm. see, you know, the heart and the soul of somebody in the spirit, you're really kind of missing out on the whole point of this whole journey, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah, for real. I mean, one of the reasons that I think this, the experience that I had in the nursing homes was so powerful for me, and one of the reasons I think that this book sort of applies outside of people who work in healthcare is because mm-hmm. for me, I was like so many people. I didn't have healthcare experience and I didn't like nursing homes.
Right.
You know, there's that vulnerability, yes, but there's also just awkwardness. I would always think, oh, what am mm-hmm. I supposed to say? What am I supposed to do? You know, this right. person has a deformity. That person is, you know, mumbling the same thing over and over again. This person is drooling. And I just feel like I don't know what to do. So it made me feel uncomfortable. And that was sort of the approach I had. And that's just a fact. Like in the nursing homes, there's sort of a gathering of people that are difficult to deal with, that look funny, talk yeah. funny, act different, you know. So it's a challenging environment. It's an environment where it's challenging to see people as people because their exteriors are so damaged in many cases. You know, because if you're a healthy older person, you're not in a nursing home. So it's right. the ones who really are struggling that are in the nursing home.
Also about the vulnerability that you could be that person.
I think
so. Isn't that really what shatters your timber? Isn't
yeah,
really
well, I think it's a combination.
Timbers, right?
yeah. yeah, I think it's all of those things. We don't want to think about that aspect of our mortality.
Right.
We don't want to
yeah.
think about the possibility of my body's not going to fail. That's for other people, not for
right.
me. But all of these attitudes, like the discomfort and the concern about what it says about my own mortality, all of those things are all self-centered. Like that's all
right.
thinking about me. What do I say? Mm-hmm. Who am I thinking about? I'm thinking about myself. Oh no, this is scary because it reminds me of my own mortality. Who am I thinking about? I'm thinking about me.
Right.
And the lesson that I learned when I saw the people, and I thought that, you know, the phrase of the heart in this industry, in this company, they use the phrase caring and attentive heart. You know, they're just different ways
mm-hmm.
of saying the same thing. But the people who had that, you know, showed me that when we think about ourselves, then nursing homes are awkward and difficult. When we think about the people there, when we think about
right.
them, then it changes everything. A person who goes in thinking about the patients isn't thinking, oh gosh, that man is drooling, that's so uncomfortable. A person who goes in thinking about the patients goes in and notices not just that he's drooling, but notices that he's wearing a Mavericks cap or something. And then
right.
what they notice is, oh, it's a basketball fan. I'm going to go talk to this guy.
Right.
You know, find out what he knows about the patient. And I met a patient like that. And I met a patient who just repeated the same thing over and over again, just sort of in a mumble, constantly
mm-hmm.
talked. And I found that very uncomfortable. I avoided him. But then later when I was with the activities director in that facility, he brought me over specifically to meet this guy, the one that I had avoided when I was thinking about myself. And pointed out that what he is saying actually was he was listing the capitals of the different companies, of the countries,
mm-hmm.
excuse me, Lima, Peru, Bogota, Colombia. He just knew all these capitals and was talking about them. This was one thing he'd held on to in his life. And
right.
so this man who worked in the facility showed me that that's not something to be afraid of. This was this man's way of communicating. This was this man's way of holding on to his dignity and his uniqueness. He was essentially showing off that he knew all these capitals. It made him happy. And then when I went to him and asked him to tell me some, he was delighted. So the same guy, the same person, became very different depending on whether I was thinking about myself or thinking about him. And that's just true of all of us. I mean, the whole world is like that. When I'm just thinking about myself, then everybody's a threat or an object and they're a problem, and I'm just trying to navigate all these objects. But when everybody around me is a real person, when I'm not thinking about just myself and I'm thinking about them, then their stories matter to me and their past matters to me. And it's just more friendly. I'm open to more people. I met so many wonderful, wonderful residents. There's one woman, her story's in the book too. Her name was Alice, and she had a sort of a big portion of her head missing. There was a big sort of sunken cavern in her head, and that when I first came in, I thought, this is the one person I need to never talk to, because all I'm going to do is stare at that spot on her head.
Right.
And that's going to be uncomfortable. That was just too, it was too awful to look at. But then I ended up talking to her when she needed something and there were no staff members around. I was there because I was observing and there was nobody around to help her and she needed help. And once I went over to help her and I helped her get water and I helped her get lemon for her water and I communicated with her. She couldn't speak very well, but we had this back and forth conversation. And when I did that, when I was thinking about her and her needs, I discovered halfway through that I wasn't even seeing that that problem with her head. It ceased to matter. It was only when I was thinking about myself that that was a problem. When I was thinking about helping her, I wasn't bothered by this scar. And when I noticed it again, it didn't look horrendous to me. I didn't feel like I needed to stare at it. I just saw the sad circumstances of her life, like that injury was generated compassion. You know, when I was thinking about myself, it generated disgust. When I was thinking about her, it generated compassion and affection. It turned out, this is so sad, this is just a side note, but this woman had a brain aneurysm at home and knew there was something wrong. You know, you can just tell there's a problem. So she got in her car and drove herself to the hospital, barely made it with the very last bit of her energy. And it was literally the last bit of her energy because she, by the time she arrived and parked her car, she couldn't get out of the car. She couldn't open the door anymore. And she sat in that parking lot for 2 days before somebody noticed her. And at that point, there was so much brain damage that they had to take that, you know, section out. I mean, that's a real human being who is really suffering. I mean, what a tragic story. I just want to go give her a hug. But that's what happens when we get to know people. Then we want to go give them a hug and help them, you know, as opposed to when I first met her and I was thinking, I can't talk to this woman. That's too uncomfortable. You know, we all have the power to see people the way they truly are, to get to know them, to find out their story, to find out what's going on with them and engage with them and to become compassionate and to become friendly. We don't have to treat people around us, even if they come off badly, even if they look funny, even if they have off-putting behaviors. That doesn't have to be isolating to us. We don't have to just dismiss them. We can still have compassion and a relationship. We don't need everybody to be just like us and to be happy and friendly and easy to talk to. We have a larger pool than that if we are willing to see people the way they really are.
And I think also, too, the idea of sometimes people don't wear their issues so that you can see them right before and then have a chance to judge them and decide which way you're going. I can remember going to, we had a local church here, and it is a shrine to a saint, and it's a healer. And I remember they had a healing mass one day. And I said, I needed to go because, I mean, I was really feeling all out of sorts and I didn't know up from down and all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I really want to go. So I had my husband take me there, and you had to, you know, you kneel. It was a Catholic church, and you had to kneel down. I said, I cannot put my knees to the kneeler there in such pain. So I kind of sat down, and I was looking all around, and to me, in my concept, I said, it's a healing mass. I almost expected everybody to have stretchers everywhere, and people be coming in with their poles, and you know what I mean, and their walkers and everything, and there'd be people carrying other people in, like you see on TV and all, and here the 90% of the church was regular people. And I said, oh, they need to go out. They need to get out of the seats. There's nothing wrong with them. They need to let the people in here that really need to be, you know, healed. And I sat down a little while and I said, okay, so maybe this person has something else. Maybe our infirmities are not on the outside. Maybe they're on the inside. And then it just, it's about, that was another shift, you know.
Yeah.
Understand, you might be seeing that someone that's walking down the street and, you know, they've got their high heels on and their hair is all coiffed and doesn't move in the, in, you know, in perfect porcelain skin and all this other. And you don't know what's going on inside them, nor do you even give a hoot because you're only looking at the outside, you know?
Yeah. And we all do this, you know, we judge people, but then we also all, at least I, you know, I know for myself, I really behave worse when I'm really stressed. One of the rudest things I ever did, you know, I remember yelling at a bus driver. I mean, I was mean. It was completely uncalled for. You don't need to yell. But it was the same week there'd been a death in my close family. Mm-hmm. And I just was embroiled. You know, it just, all my emotions were crazy. And it's not an excuse for yelling at a stranger, but I really was suffering. I wasn't just a jerk. I was really suffering. I think anybody who'd seen me would have thought, well, that lady just has a problem. You know, what is wrong with her? They would have felt like they can talk me down.
Everything. Yeah.
Yeah. But that wasn't real. It was just sort of the overflow of the emotions that I was having.
Yep.
So we have to be really, really careful when we encounter other people who are behaving badly, not to just assume, which we so often do, just assume that they're just a jerk. Nobody would act like that unless they were a jerk. Well, actually, they might act like that if they'd had a recent death in their family. They might act like that if they had just been fired or thought they were going to be fired, or if they were breaking up with someone they'd been with for decades. You know, there are lots of circumstances that would make a person just sort of overflow with negative feelings and release them. And so, you know, it's an important thing, I think, as we go through life to just try to think, you know, one thing I do when I see somebody behaving badly is try to make up a story for them. Like sometimes you can get to know what's really going on with a person. If it's a coworker, neighbor, family member, sometimes you can't. Sometimes you're on the highway, you know, sometimes you're in the grocery store and somebody's just behaving badly and you don't have the chance to find out what's going on, but you can make up a story. And I will make up a story where, you know, this woman just got really, really bad news, but she still has to get food for her kids. And she's come to the grocery store and she just got a flat tire in her car, you know, like a series of of bad things. And I think just under those circumstances, I'd probably act like a jerk too, just to put myself in the mindset of feeling compassion for the person who's behaving badly. And for all we know, that story is true. I don't need to assume that everything is just wonderful in her life. She's just a jerk. I mean, that's possible. But it's actually more likely doing her best and she's living her life the best she can and pressures are really getting to her. That's actually more likely. Bearing that in mind really helps us with the shift and seeing people as people. It's a way to sort of generate compassion.
And also, too, to believe that the only truth is the truth for themselves. You know, I remember one day, it was my husband and I and another coworker of his, and we were driving down the street. And I looked over to the right, and I said, oh, my gosh, the woman's sleeping out in the grass in front of this huge, fancy home, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my husband's response was, oh, it's just a homeless person, and he kept driving on. The other lady that was with us was an elderly woman, and she said, oh, no, I think it's maybe she just got put out by her husband, and that's as far as she made it. And myself, I looked around and I said, no. I said, let's just go see if she's okay. I mean, I absolutely had no judgment. I just wanted to feel for her well-being. And it was such I was almost like, I was almost like a deer in headlights. Are you kidding me that y'all just said that? You know? And I went, oh gosh, you know, like zero, let's go see if she's okay. And I was like, I wanted to turn around, and they were like, no, you can't stick your nose into anyone else's business. And I went, okay. And, you know, I think sometimes, too, we have to say it's tough with that because we see this a lot playing out. I mean, I remember another time when I was working in a rehab facility, and I was a CNA at the time. And, you know, you have to wheel everybody. You'd change them in their room and put a sheet around them with no clothes on, put them in a wheelchair, and then you take them and line them up in the hallway wrapped in a sheet to get a shower where you would hose them down, wrap them back up in a sheet, and then take them back to the room. And I said, gosh, this is so degrading. This is just like washing your car. You know, it was terrible. And I just couldn't get it out of my head. And, but then there was this one man there, and he would always ask the nurse for those little tiny pencils, you know, that you would get at the hospital, little teeny ones.
And golf pencils.
Right, and he would be drawing pictures on all the napkins from the food that would come, and then he'd let it go. So one day, my son was about 12 years old, and I said, you know, and I told him the story, and my son said, oh, man, he needs some colored pencils and paper. Let's get him some. So we did. And we brought him into him, and don't you know, like, I almost got fired that day. It was like, don't you ever help anyone. Don't you ever reach out to anyone. You know,
no.
That's not your job. And I think sometimes when people say, when we see these types of instances, what is our position? Do we reach out and help others? Do we turn around and take that car back? Do we turn around and get pencils to someone that might not have them? You know, I think a lot of times we say, if we think of it as our J-O-B, then we've got a problem. But if we think about it as reaching out to another human being, that's where we should be, right?
Yeah, that is so sad. I mean,
one thing I learned, it really is so sad.
One of the things that I learned in researching the healthcare industry was that there really are facilities where employees are not encouraged to help. And the ones that I did,
and they're
the
fired
ones
for
appear
it.
In this,
I got fired
yeah,
for it.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. The one that I researched, they were encouraged to help.
Right.
And I'd like to see that attitude sort of spread further through the industry because it makes
you
such
wonder,
a difference
don't
people
you?
To be helped. Yeah, I mean, it's just all you can do is feel sad. And you hear stories, too, about terrible things that happen in nursing homes. And that thing, those things are rare and becoming rarer, but they always are the ones that make the news. And it's, you know, it's hard to feel trusting. But I want to say, you know, on a personal note, I admire you so much for being a CNA. I developed such an admiration for people who do that job because they are the people who are closest to the patients, you know, who really do those intimate things, the showering and the changing and the lifting that really puts you face to face and heart to heart with human beings who are, you know, sort of on their way out. And it's a tough job. It's physically demanding. It's emotionally demanding. But people who do that job well are really, really, truly benefiting humanity because they offer kindness to these people who aren't getting it from very many places. You know, one of the saddest things I encountered was elderly people whose families didn't visit.
Right.
You know, they
right.
had families and nobody came to see them. And the kindness of the nurses and the CNAs, you know, and the housekeepers, you know, who gave them a kind word and who would do things like bring them gifts, you know, bring them McDonald's, bring them colored pencils, you know, really made a difference in human lives. And what I just don't know how much more you can ask from a life than to be a positive impact on other people. We're all going to die. We're all going to reach the end. And no matter what your personal beliefs are, at some point, you kind of have to stand before the universe and make an accounting. What was my life for? What did I do? Did I have a great career? Maybe. But how am I going to feel saying that in the face of the vast, you know, expanse of humanity?
Right.
Well, I myself made a lot of money. I don't think I'm going to feel proud of that. But I think the people who don't make a ton of money and they never get any credit for it, but the ones who work in healthcare and who help other people and who provide these moments of brightness and a sense of affection and the ones who hold the hands of those who are passing away, who aren't even family members, who just do that for other people and they spend their life in helping, I think those people are going to be able to stand tall and proud and strong and say, I made the world a better place. I helped people who weren't getting helped anywhere else. I stepped in and I gave love to people who needed it.
And that circles us right back to the beginning of our story today, yeah, where we talked about it's not a job, it's a family. If we think everyone as family, or we think everyone as being part of humanity, which it all is, then that's mm-hmm. a different story. It isn't about a job. You know, here again in New Orleans, I always talk about this on the show. Every time, like the other day, we were walking into the grocery store, and we were walking out, and someone was walking in. They're like, hey, how are you? How are you doing? Or we don't know them. That's just what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, mm-hmm. and it's just, I think, to be able to start to extend yourself and say, recognize the person next to you, in front of you, at your job, at the place you work, at the gas station. It doesn't matter who or where you are. Recognize those around you and see, you know, wow, that's, you know, I see that playing out, and you become more aware instead of being so, I call it a whitewashed and pristine, you know, in your silo,
uh-huh.
where you only see that which you choose to see. I think
right.
to be able to reach out and mm-hmm. see that which is truly around you is a whole different ballgame, right?
I describe the very same thing. You know, when we are just thinking about ourselves and it's all about me, one thing I keep saying is, like, I'm the movie star. The whole world is a movie about me, and I am the movie star,
right.
is a way that so many of us live. It's all about me. Everything that happens is about me and what I want, and everybody and how they behave is about me because I'm the movie star, you know? And, mm-hmm. and nobody's a movie star.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
right.
we're just all living together. Nobody's mm-hmm. better than anybody else. And this mindset we get into where I think about making my life perfect and pristine. I love the silo imagery. That's great. Is just so false because we miss what's going on with other people. I mean, it's not an honest way to live.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dishonest way of living where we think it's all about me. It's not all about me. I have responsibility to the people around me. There are other human beings who have their own goals around me. And the worst part is when I'm in that silo, who knows what damage I'm doing to other people who are reaching out for my help and I'm not offering it because I'm so worried about keeping my silo pristine. I'm so worried about keeping my image perfect. I'm so worried about getting done what I'm trying to get done that I'm not helping people who need me. Like, I can actually be making the world a worse place
right.
by being so obsessed with my own perfect little image, my own perfect little world, my own perfect little movie.
Right.
You know, people tend to think, well, you know, what's the harm? I'm just minding my own business. Well, actually, you don't know what harm you might be doing to people who are counting on you and could use help from you when
right.
you don't notice them.
Yeah. You know, in closing, I think, Kim, also, too, I noticed the other day we were driving downtown, and I saw this teenage person, and they were sleeping face down in the grass in the park. And we turned the corner, and we went to the Catholic bookstore, and across the street, and I said to my husband, oh my gosh, did you see that kid in the park? And he says, no. He's like, he didn't pay attention to anything, you know? And
mm-hmm.
I'm always paying attention to everything. And I said, oh my gosh. I said, I wonder if he's okay. And he says, what do you mean? I said, well, I guess you could say he's probably homeless, or you could say he's drunk, or maybe you could say he's a student from the university and he got too drunk and he's in trouble. Or you could say he's drugged out. Or you can maybe come back later and they'll be picking him up because he's dead. Which one would you like? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the idea yeah. that to be open to possibilities in the world and not always have your own preformed idea is really so important, don't you think?
It really is. Because our preformed opinions can blind us to what's really going
mm-hmm.
on. We only see what we expect to see. Science is full of experiments that show that, you know. We see what we expect to see. So
yeah.
having expectations for people, especially if they're negative, well, that person I'm sure is going to be awful, then that's all
right.
we see about them, you know, which is so, it's not fair to them and it's damaging to our relationships. Yeah, so this openness, you know, what we're talking about with the chef, what we've been talking about today, Jeanette, isn't assuming that people are better than they are or
right.
assuming things are better than they are. It's just about having our eyes wide open. We're not blinkered.
Mm-hmm.
We're not blind. We're not obsessed with ourselves. We're open to seeing what's going on to other people. And some of it isn't going to be pretty. Some of it's going to be sad. Some of it's going to be aggressive. But some of it is really going to be great, because we'll see, you know, if we don't have preconceived notions, we can see the struggles that other people are going through. And sometimes they're really being heroic in their struggle with their own life and their own circumstances. But we never see that if we're just thinking about ourselves and we're only expecting bad behavior from them.
We're really seeing life as it truly is. We're really turning the dial and say, "It's I'm not seeing life as the illusion that I wish to create it to be." We're really seeing as the truth that it is, and being able to say that's okay, and honoring it as is, and accepting it. You know, instead of trying to say, "I want it to," it has to have pink daisies in the front, or I'm not going there. Kind of idea, you know. And I think the idea to be able to say, accept life as it presents and all that's in it, right?
Yeah, exactly. I know we're finishing up, but I have a story about my own life and the unhappiness that I was experiencing at the time. And I ended up calling it the paradise delusion, because what I thought was what I needed in my life was for everybody to be nicer to me. And if everybody around me would just be nicer and more understanding, then I would be happy and then I would be fine. You know, like I need the world to be different to be happy. And that just turned out not to be true. What I needed, really, was to see people as they are. I needed to see the world as it was. And when I did that, I was able to see that actually people were being fine to me. People were treating me well. Some of the mistreatment I was experiencing was just their response to me being unkind to them. And that really I was surrounded by people who were kind, who were loving, and who were supportive. And instead of wanting the world to be different so that I can have my ideal where everybody, you know, is focused on me and making me happy, that's not fair to other people. The way to become happy and to become whole and at one with the world is to drop all of those expectations about what other people need to be doing for me and start thinking about what I can do for them, thinking about them, where they stand, where they are, what's really going on in the world. And I was able to discover that the world was a better place than I thought. It really was. Life is really full of wonder and magic and kindness and greatness and goodness. And we miss it when we're obsessed with what do I need? What do I want? How should people be treating me? When we can open that viewpoint and see other people, the world gets better. It doesn't get perfect, but it becomes the way it truly is. And it becomes a world where I can see what other people want, not just what I want, but what other people want to have happen. It's sort of expansive and huge and exciting, that world. And we all have access to it. It's a power everybody can access.
Absolutely. Well, Kim, could you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you? That would be wonderful.
Yes, I have a website. It's KimberlyWhiteBooks.com. That's KimberlyWhiteBooks, white like the color, and then books, plural, KimberlyWhiteBooks.com. And my book is The Shift, How Seeing People as People Changes Everything. You can find it at any major bookseller. It's available online. And I'm also available on Facebook. That's a great way to reach me, at Kimberly White, The Shift.
Well, Kimberly, it was such a great time to have you with us today. I think the idea that we have opportunities and to be able to say it doesn't have to stay the same, and I don't have to be in my own wallowing self, and I don't have to be in a wallowing self of a place or an existence that doesn't work for me either. I can shift my perception, but I can also shift my location if I need to. So if I think, you know, the world around you doesn't fit, look around and see what you have an opportunity to do and be able to step up and do that, right?
Absolutely. I agree 100%.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It was such a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Jeanette. It was wonderful to talk to you.
You're welcome. If you'd like to find out more information about Kimberly White, please do click on the link on the bottom of today's show page, and you'll go directly to her website. And it really is about that this is not supposed to be a place on earth where we have to fight all the time. Life is a joy. It is an ease. It does have ups and downs, and it's all okay. So thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Till tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.